Today's stories determines tomorrow's success. So this Black History Month, we are memorializing four Black entrepreneurial stories in collaboration with Black-owned Hamilton. They have a plethora of services that allows Black entrepreneurs to quiet the noise so they can listen to their own voices. Black-owned has a community platform where business owners can access funding, courses, events, different unique opportunities, as well as mental health services and resources, so that you as a Black entrepreneur can thrive both in your business and personally. Welcome back to Buzzworthy. I'm your host, Shalaisi Harris. And today in the studio, we have Faisal Bello, who is the founder of Bello Foods. Where you can find it as Canadian in Toronto in Freshco if it's not sold out already. But if you are international, you can find Bello Foods in the UK, Western Africa, South and Central America, and of course, both Canada and the US. So we are about to dive into the founding story with Faisal, who has just a plethora of stories and just so rich in experience. Faisal, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate all the time that you've taken in preparation. Thank you so much, Elise.
Yeah, absolutely. I, unfortunately, like maybe many listeners, had not heard about you before or your company. So to find out what you were doing, you know, right here in our Hamilton backyard was quite phenomenal to me. And I was just like, what? Like, how did I not know this? But this is one of the reasons I love doing this, is because I get to meet phenomenal founders like yourself that are just building in the quiet. And I'm here to make some buzz about you.
It's definitely intentional. Well, I'm a Hamilton native, born and raised, very proud of the Steel City. But what we wanted to do with our branding is go global right from the onset. And we wanted it to be something that felt familiar, but didn't really peg or pin to any one particular demographic. Mm-hmm. And that blue, fresh, light color that is our branding was something that was able to resonate in many households. Yeah. So it was intentional.
Yeah. I love that. And so, Faisal, before Bello Foods even became a thing, you know, one of the very first questions we ask every entrepreneur is, what do you think prepared you or set you up to choose entrepreneurship? Or did entrepreneurship choose you?
Well, I think it chose me. There's a lot of core memories that I have that I could probably assign to the reason why I'm here today. But I definitely say that entrepreneurship found me and grabbed me by both of my arms and just dragged me in, so to speak. But no, I do come from a family background that was always business driven. From my grandmother in Nigeria, she was a matriarch, true and true. And she was a very powerful businesswoman. My father, engineering background, but still business savvy and having business acumen. So from early days as a youth, I was always exposed to commerce. I come from a place in Nigeria called Kano, which is literally the center of commerce. That's the state slogan. So yeah, it's really in our blood. The Hausa people, which is the language that is spoken there, is a language of trade. So it's really deeply rooted into who I am as a being. And yeah, I just think it was a natural thing.
Just a natural fit, how you rolled into it. So with, you know, your grandmother's influence as a businesswoman and then your father's business savviness, what is it about them that didn't make you shy away from this? Because choosing entrepreneurship or having it drag you along is not the easiest thing you can do in the world. So something had to make you say, you know what, as much as this is going to like demand every ounce of energy from me, I'm going to go ahead and do it.
Well, you don't really have a choice when you're just in that kind of environment. And the very specific characteristics about my grandmother and my father that driven me to be that is they don't take no for an answer. Mm. And my grandmother actually named me, my name's Faisal, and it does mean decisive or stubborn. Right. So I think it's quite fitting.
I didn't actually know that.
Yeah. I think it's quite fitting that I'd have their characteristics and I'd have the tendency to not take no for an answer and just a consummate work ethic that is tireless. I'd say those are the characteristics that really stain my mind when I think back to how they've impacted or shaped me. Yeah. My grandmother, I'd speak to on the phone often. And though I didn't understand too much of the language, whenever I'm greeting her and then speaking to my father about her after, it's always about trade or fabrics or textiles or cloves or garlic, different commodities that she would be facilitating. And then lots of visuals, pictures. Both my parents, they were very into photography. Like they liked to be photographed, dressed well all the time. So I'd see lots of pictures of just history in front of me. So it's undeniable to say that they've had an impact on who I am today and the reason I'm in business. Bello Foods is actually from its inception an homage to my grandmother. And the reason I chose dried commodities is because she was a commodities trader. And I just tried to revolutionize the business a little bit and put a little bit of a spin where we're doing some modern things, mm-hmm. not staying in raw materials and doing what most raw material heavy export nations do is send them out raw. Yeah. Adding value and finishing was where my father would come in. He was big into tech, being an engineer, and he understood the value of adding value throughout the value chain and making sure that our goods, as in West African people, diaspora people, didn't leave without having some sort of value add. Yeah. So yeah, I'd say they're pretty much the reason and the influence that I am today. And I'm trying to do a good job, be a steward, and continue legacy. That's what drives me, keeps me going when times are hard, and so on and so forth.
That's amazing. We have a giveaway from the Hamilton Chamber of Commerce, who is the voice of the Hamilton business community. As part of the Black History Month Story series, they're giving away 1 year membership to the Chamber of Commerce, along with $1,000 in advertising credit. All you have to do is follow the Chamber, follow Buzzworthy Podcast, and follow Black Owned Hamilton. We will do the rest, and we will see you on Friday, February 27th for the final draw. Stay tuned. You were telling me a story of your dad when you spent a summer with him driving around. Tell the audience that story, because I really loved it. And I think stories like that really imprint in us as, you know, children that become adults. And like you said, when things get hard, you remember those moments, and they help continue to drive you forward in so many ways. But it teaches you really core fundamentals of business at like such a young age, but from like your very young mind that can be translated in today's, you know, experiences for yourself.
Well, I mean, I was a very active kid. Like, I love to play sports and be outside, and I'm one of three siblings, so it was really just kind of by accident one summer, I guess, playing basketball or football or soccer wasn't enough. And I saw my dad making trips to Toronto all the time. And he would go all over the GTA and even sometimes Niagara bound. And he's always hustling and on the road. So I said, you know what, let me join him. And I made a big effort to just go with him. And one, I get to spend time with my father, which is great. And then also, I get to go to Toronto, and I know maybe I'll get fortunate and we'll go eat somewhere nice or something will come that's different than
being a little in the park. Spoil, you know?
Just a little. Yeah. So I found that he would always be so personable, and that every time we went to a different business, because at this stage he was heavy into telecommunications, that's the specific route of engineering that he is actually a genius in. And he would go to do network connectivity at a number of restaurants or sports bars and help them with their satellite networking. So it was very fascinating to just see different types of people and his rapport with them. And he would remember things about all of them, or he'd be very sensitive to their issues and take time to sit and talk with them. For a young kid, you're stuck in the car waiting a few hours thinking, when is dad going to finish his conversation? But it worked out because it really helped me hone my interpersonal skills and take the time to find the human element that lays within business. And I think it's one of the more important skills that helps you when you're in adversity. So yeah, I spent so many hours just soaking up game, as you'll call it, from my father. And those summers were probably some of the best times that I had with him. And I still get to travel with him and do business with him. He's an advisor to me always. But I do remember specifically saying, as we returned back from one of our trips, my dad was asking me, well, what do you want to do? And I told him, I said, well, whatever business you leave behind for me, I'm taking. And I can remember that moment very candidly, like it's fresh in my mind.
Yeah. And here you are doing it and living up to your name, you know, deciding on something and sticking with it. Which is incredible. So, you know, you talked about your grandmother being in commodities and your dad really, you know, showing the value of building the value chain. Every time something moves, you add value to it. What was it about food and these particular kinds of foods like hibiscus and or what we call sorrel? What about that made you want to get into this food business?
Again, no choice.
Why was there no choice? Tell us, give us more detail.
When I was young, if I wasn't playing basketball or I wasn't with my father on a expedition into the world of telecom, mm-hmm. I was packing sorrel. That was my summer job, and we'd get a certain amount of dollars, well, cents actually, per bag, per box. And that would be our way to learn money and also to be able to afford things that our parents wouldn't just willingly buy for us. You know, you had to work, put an input, and then get something. So I always had sorrel boxes in my living room, packed to the ceiling. And we would literally be packing our clients' product. And that, along with the family history, my grandmother is one of the first people in Nigeria to introduce the sorrel drink. It was for my father's junior brother, so my uncle, his wedding. She made it, and she would always put cloves and ginger, and it's a very deep aromatic flavor. And it was a big hit. So everybody wanted that drink after. My dad thought, oh, let me import some. So in 1987, I actually came across the Air Waybill from KLM.
Oh, the Waybill. Got it.
Literally, he sent it by air to Toronto Pearson from Nigeria and imported the hibiscus. I don't know if he's the first, but 86 would be, or 87 rather, would be the first time that I know, a long time ago. And it was just something that kind of said, you know, this is it. So when I put the memories of my childhood and always drinking sorrel in the household, my mother is from a Jamaican background. So every Christmas we were drinking sorrel. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of said, yeah, you know what? Stick with what you know it well. I didn't really have much choice.
I love that because a couple things. You decided from a young age, and then this opportunity really came out. And in all of your stories, you know a lot about the history of your family, even beyond your time, which is quite impressive. And you can really tell like it that truly is a grounding aspect of who you are.
It is. I spend a lot of time, like I said, my parents, my mother, my father. They kept good records of things. And me being like the kid that I was, I'd always like rummage through documents or like, because I was so interested in what my dad did for work and business, I'd come across like banking receipts or just any documents. Like, I'm really big into operations in my business. I really was into finance and accounting, and that's what grounds a lot of my business decision making. And I see it from a kid. I was always interested in those things. So record keeping was a big thing in my household. So I always was able to really document things and dates and times, and then being able to make a conclusion or like make a observation about what I was able to find. So yeah, it was really easy for me to catalog these things and to just kind of fluidly come into being a business person of my own when I got older.
Yeah.
But yeah.
There are a couple of things we talked about, you know, before the cameras went live. And I thought they were so fascinating because mostly I really do like having these very organic conversations. So I don't know a ton about you. But in just, you know, our behind the scenes chat, we're talking about your experience from high school to university, going through university and sort of taking a step back from that for a moment and then going back. Tell us about that story, what happened and what took you back to university.
Yeah, it's an interesting journey because, I mean, all throughout high school, I was very focused. I knew what I wanted to do. I was interested in marketing, you know, a lot of numbers and mathematics. Like, I really spent a lot of time with numbers. So I knew I was going to be in business. And when I went to school, it was at a time where a lot was going on inside of my world, but also from a global standpoint. We're on the cusp of coming off a financial crisis. So things were a lot different at that time. And globalization was a new and unproven thing, really, at that point. It was in its infancy. It's not at all like how it is today. So when I was at school, I was really battling with the familial knowledge base that I had and the exposure to business, and then contrasting that with formalized business in a Western sense. There's a lot of differences between a trader or a commodities business tycoon and then someone who's in the Western sense of being a corporate entity. So those two worlds were battling. And I know in my first year at Ottawa U, I'll never forget, the dean would do all of the first years to kind of welcome, you know, you in and get you to understand lobbying in Ottawa and get you to understand how business and government interact, because it is the nation's capital. And I would just sit there thinking, like, I don't belong here. Not because of like anything to do with my demographics. Like, that wasn't it. It was the way I thought. And I got to speak to my dean quite a bit. I was lucky, I guess, or just right place at the right time. And he told me I don't belong here. And he really said, yeah, spread your wings. And I also had a TA who played a role. There's a younger black professional who was doing his internship at KPMG. And he said, yeah, if you got something and you feel sure about it, then go. And that was enough for me. I started working, built up my capital, made some investments. The investments went well, and I started business. I flew right to Nigeria, and that was it. I didn't look back until I was forced to look back. Dealing with clients, you know, being in boardrooms, that's something I did early on. When I was younger, there was a Rotary Club that wanted to put a basketball court in my neighborhood. And I was on that panel and I addressed a few people in a boardroom. So it was just regular to me. So flash forward to being out of school, fresh into business, I was in a boardroom and there was a lot of senior members of this company. And the first thing that they did was look at me as a kid because they had children my age, and that's nothing against them, but I was trying to talk numbers. I was trying to talk about cost per box and what kind of margins they could see. And the VP just couldn't look past how I was maybe close to her daughter's age. And at that point, I realized that if I don't have an accolade or some sort of designation on my resume, then I'm going to come to this roadblock more than once. Yeah. So at that moment, I realized, well, if I'm trying to have a conversation about this and we're staying on the topic of education, then I need education. And it was probably the best thing I did, because running a business while going to school makes all the courses relevant.
Yes.
All my projects were just on my business.
Yeah. So
it really helped kind of button up everything that I was doing. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's actually quite smart and a really good way to look at it. I look at universities right now, and a lot of them have these sort of entrepreneurial programs. And that's something I never really even considered. My dad always had like these side gigs and things that he did, like burning CDs and, you know, all of these like little side hustle things. And he would do great because we lived on a small island in the Bahamas and we were really just the only family with a lot of technology.
Oh, wow.
So we were really bringing technology into this island of,
oh, like, that's amazing.
5,000 people that
I can relate
would
to
never
that.
Really get access to that.
No, I can
stuff,
relate to that,
know?
Really.
So he was always in all of these like little things, which was quite interesting experience to watch. But when I went to university, I sort of had very similar experience in terms of, it's not an ego thing. I promise you it's not an ego thing, but I believe in learning. Yeah. And I think you can learn anywhere in any environment and everything can teach you something.
I concur.
And yeah, that's simply how I've just always viewed the world. So I didn't see university as something as being necessary, but I actually came to a very similar conclusion and ended up in university because I was just like, if somebody's going to use a lack of education as a reason to tell me no, I'm going to shut them down before they can even get it out.
No, that makes
sense. So, yeah. So as much as I personally don't love academia, it's a necessary evil to some degree.
Yeah. No, it's a business as well.
It is a business. It has to continue.
Yeah, it definitely has to continue.
Yeah. So as you make your way through university, doing your courses and building your business, what were those early days like for you to doing these two very different things at once?
Yeah. It was very tough. And I really look at entrepreneurship as a unique experience. There's often times where younger people I encounter ask me, what advice would you give? And it's really hard to answer that question because what works for me doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work for you and vice versa. What didn't work for me may actually be your wheelhouse, may be the area that you should lean into. So first doing an assessment of who you are and just figuring out what your skill set is the main thing. And for me, in the early days, it was my engine. I knew I could outwork anybody. And I'll be up at 3 a.m. if I need to be. And I'll still get up at 5 a.m. if I need to. Mm-hmm. So that was the main thing that I really used to kind of drive myself. Like, I knew my product was strong. I knew that I had some very favorable logistics setups. I knew that I had relationships that I could maximize and utilize. So in the early days, it was about meeting how big of an operation that was there for the taking. I wasn't ready for it, but I had to, in terms of necessity, just get ready. Mm-hmm. And it was really about being fearless, being uncomfortable. The most growth happens when you're uncomfortable. You definitely can't get to where you need to go or wherever you aspire to get to without being uncomfortable. It's just a prerequisite. So in the early days, it was very interesting, but it was also fun. I saw myself in a place and it was more like a dream, I guess you could say. It was more like a goal or a visualization, a manifestation of where I wanted to be. And that was something I held on to from my early days, following my father or just hearing stories of entrepreneurship. So I already created where I wanted to get to. And then it was about the roadmap to do that. And really pushing yourself to get to those places is about being uncomfortable. Yeah. So I'd say in the early days, frantic, scrambling. Yeah. And then just learning. You fail so much. And that failure is what shapes you, because how you deal with the rejection, or, you know, maybe you make a sales call and it doesn't go the way you wanted, mm-hmm. how you adjust and recalibrate yourself, it's vital. Yeah. And having the fearlessness to just get into it, and knowing failure is an option. Some people say it's not, and I think is the best way to learn. So, yeah.
And I think going back to what you were saying is like, what doesn't work for me may work for you. One failure can teach us the exact same lesson or completely different lessons, right? So always trying to, it's funny because like sometimes I'm gonna get on a soapbox about this, because very recently I was having a conversation with a friend, and I was talking about how I find in today's world, people are really outsourcing their decisions outside of themselves in every way. And what I think that is a symptom of is the fear of failure and not wanting to take the risk to go the wrong way. So especially entrepreneurs, I see this within this realm is like over mentorship. Where
I agree with you.
Instead of, you know, just trying something and having it fail before them as an entrepreneur make that decision, they have to ask 50 mentors, everybody has to come to a consensus, vote now. And it's just like, no, you chose this thing to take a risk and it might work and it might not work. And then the other part of it, I know I'm really going to rip on mentors right now.
Oh, no.
But it's just like a lot of these mentors were great in their time.
Okay.
They were great in their time. The world was a very different place.
Entirely different.
A lot of these mentors also come from the corporate environment, which is also a very different place than a startup or the business world. Like corporate is very much sort of an academic exercise. Very predictable, risk is very minimal.
Yeah, it's risk averse.
It's completely risk averse. Mm-hmm. And entrepreneurship throws out every rule book that there is. But in what I'm seeing right now is this sort of, you know, the over mentorship. But what that represents is the giving away of responsibility for failure and mm-hmm. willing to take the hard hit make sure where you're going to go.
I agree. I have some peers of mine who are big into subscribing to courses. Mm-hmm. And I have never paid for a course in my life. Mm-hmm. I read and I become a student of whatever I'm trying to tackle. Like mm-hmm. in the business that I'm in, a lot of it is international trade. And there's a lot of big businesses that can afford to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. That we just can't. Yeah. And international law has to be navigated. So you have to be a student. And I like that you pointed out you're a forever learner, because I believe really strongly in that. So you have to learn and you have to study. And then when you do study, you figure out new loopholes or things or caveats that are specific to your particular industry. And you're not going to get that nuance from somebody who's doing a blanket or generic course. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because those peers of mine, in regards to finance, let's say, for example, they've paid some big money for courses and I have the same information. And it's funny because, you know, they'll actually give me access to their courses because we're really good peers. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, well, I kind of come to the same conclusion and I actually more tailored it to myself. Mm-hmm. So yeah, having mentorship is great.
It is great.
Mind you, you know, there's things that having seasoned eyes really lend itself to, mm-hmm. but you also need to fail, and you don't want to have a blanket of security around you. That's probably the last thing an entrepreneur needs, because you don't become really successful by being coddled.
Correct.
No.
Correct.
Yeah.
I know. I just had to get that out.
I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah, it's something that I just see just happening so much, especially in the startup world, because startups have sort of really become institutionalized into this
venture capital is hunting.
Yes.
And they want to invest.
Yeah.
What better return on investment is there than a seed round?
100%.
Yeah.
But what I think that also drives is not necessarily creating for solving real problems. Yes. And sort of simply creating and being in the game for the name of entrepreneur, the name of founder, the name of CEO, and not the love for the problem or the mm-hmm. impact that's going to come out of the solution that's being found.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everything that we have as far as the space of being an entrepreneur has been really like refined. Mm-hmm. And there's such a big world of like really preparing people for that journey because so many people have taken it and technology and information has changed where I can sit on my phone and access a whole wealth of information. There's a plethora of books or podcasts like this one or shows that you can access and get information. So it's really prepackaged now. If you want to start a business in any particular industry, you can find hours of content about it. So it takes a bit of the guesswork away, a bit of the mystique of being, you know, an entrepreneur who has to figure it out. And I think that can be a detractor because when you think about the machine or big systems at work in any corporate world, you often get very generic things. Mm-hmm. You don't get artisanal or crafted things. And we need a mix. You know, some things have to be very streamlined because the industry necessitates that. But not everything has to be so cookie cutter.
Yes.
And I really would hope that entrepreneurs that are following us or, you know, coming behind us, our cohort, would really kind of balance it more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's nothing new under the sun. We're not reinventing the wheel here. No. But just leaving some room for experimentation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's the quintessential nature of the entrepreneur is the experimental nature. Because it's just like, you know, almost like the Kinder Surprises. What am I going to get in here? You know, a complete garbage toy or or a really good one? And the thing is, I think people underestimate the micro learnings that you can do on in a regular day. For example, I remember 2 years ago, my goal was to call 50 US wealth companies every single day. Okay. That was the goal. And as you just dial through and call, and your conversation changes and tweaks and changes and tweaks. And eventually you get to a language where one, you learn the language of the industry, because one of the big things for me is I came into financial services industry with never working in it, only from a consumer perspective. So I had no context of how the industry spoke about themselves.
And that's perfect.
And
that's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it really is.
And, you know, all of those micro learnings, it, you know, people tell me all the time, like, we're so impressed in terms of how fast you navigated this industry. And it was simply from just calling so many people every single day, even with the plethora of hangups.
Oh, yeah. You got to get comfortable with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You or just being on hold for hours and then realizing I should stay on hold. It's not a good use of time.
Yeah. And then I worked a new strategy.
Nice.
Where, I mean, I'll just say it. But the strategy is just like be friends with the gatekeepers. That's, just call a gatekeeper, be friends with them, and call back and then use all the information they gave you to get to the person you need to.
Well, you see, when I say the word tireless and, you know, an engine and hustler and worker, and I reference my dad's social interactions they come into play daily for me. I'll have goods at a customs warehouse at the Port of Long Beach, and if I don't make a friend at that CES, this is a CBP, like Customs Border Protection, no fly zone. You don't call them, don't bother them, because they will put your file further back.
Yes.
And if you don't make a friend at the examination site, your container of goods can be sitting there for days. And you incur fees doing that. So yeah, it's something that you really have to learn. There's a personal layer on top of business. We're not robots. We all interact with one another, and there is a human element.
So I love that we sort of like naturally got here. So what is your take? Because I am willing to have this conversation much more publicly than ever before. But what is your take on exactly what we're talking about, the human element? And now with what I am seeing is as the overuse of AI in what should be really basic human interaction.
Very interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
It's a topic that is quite touchy.
Mm-hmm.
There is an environmental component.
Yeah.
There's an economic component, a component, and there is a human capital component. Mm-hmm. And I look at AI as a welcome tool, just like any other tool.
Yeah.
And we have to reference, I mean, we're young enough to remember the internet age. I remember thinking about a touchscreen and then getting one.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really great tool to have. So I can't look at AI any differently. And I do think there is a hybrid mix where you have to find that sweet spot. You don't want to completely automate your entire business where that your customer's frustrated going through a basic customer service interaction with AI. The tech hasn't caught up yet to how good a human can be at finding the direct need when communication is translated. I think there is a bit of a sharp learning curve. I think a lot of human capital is going to disappear from the labor force. And I think that, AI needs to be kind of wheeled in a little bit, but it is a powerful tool.
Yeah.
I definitely use it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Same.
Yeah, I definitely use it. What are your thoughts on it? Like, do you think positive, negative, or neutral?
I am neutral because I believe a tool is a tool, right? What you do with the tool at the end of the day is what your choices are. But I think where my frustration comes in a little bit is in the very, very basic human interaction. When somebody sends, when I send a simple email requesting something very simple, and then I get like a 2-paragraph response with like extended hyphens in them about something that like...
There's AI identifiers. You know when it's been used.
You know. It's just like, just let me know you care enough to write me one sentence. Mm-hmm. And I think with that, I'm like a firm believer in this. I've been talking about this for about 2 or 3 years, where as AI sort of starts to take over, the people that are really going to thrive are the people that really lean into being more human every single day. Because
it's an interesting perspective.
Because what happens, right, is like all of these people are taken away. They're willingly subtracting the human element from their day to day and giving it away to AI. So when somebody finds somebody and they say, "Whoa, that's a person that just spoke to me," the value goes through the roof.
You're right.
The value goes through the roof. So I know a lot of people are scared from like a job perspective, et cetera. But if I think AI is a huge like spike in the return to human. And I think we lost the human component of things when we became too consumerist. We lost like how you really treated people because of over automation and now AI and then over personalization as well too, where when I see people trying to return to Tamagotchis and their home phones and things like that, this slower pace. And I think a lot of that simply is a return to human, because when you are on a phone that's tethered to the wall and you can't walk around your house,
you can only go so far.
You can only go so far. What that says is I am demanding all of your time, or I am giving you all of my human time in this very moment. And the value of that goes up. So that's my take on it. I don't know if anybody else.
No, I agree with
really
you, because it's
feels it or sees it.
It's a clear decision you're making when you kind of blend between digital and analog, and you have to slow down.
Yeah.
That's a good, like, the corded phone is a good way to put it, because I can't really leave my home to have this call because it's on a cord. And if that's the only line you can reach me on, then I have to give you that time.
Yes.
I can't be multitasking.
Correct.
And I feel like, yeah, that's a good point. We really dilute our interactions because we're so overwhelmed with technology all day long.
Yeah.
And I do think there is like a renaissance taking place. Speaking about mentoring, I have some younger peers that I interact with. They're into arts and fashion and design. And I like to keep a pulse with different age brackets just to see how the reality that is impacting different people. And yeah, there is this want to kind of draw and steer away from TikTok, which is just doom scrolling, as we call it, and finding a more natural and organic way of consuming content, longer form measures of content, instead of having everything so quick and short burst. So yeah, I do think AI plays a huge role in how we interact with the customer and how we interact with even other businesses. It's going to be very fascinating, though. The next 25 to 30 years, we are in for a treat.
Oh, we are. Yeah. We are. Next week, we're in for a treat. We don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Next week. Yeah, it could be vastly different.
Yeah.
Wow. that was a good side tangent.
Yeah,
definitely. I appreciate that. So when you know, you've been in business now for almost 15 years.
Yeah.
Congratulations. That's huge, because, you know, once you hit the 10-year mark, you're officially a successful business. That's huge. What do you think, you know, your early 20s, late teen self would think about you?
That's a very interesting question. The mark of a good question is my walls are up. I don't want to answer, but I will. I think a younger version of me would say, good on you, mate. Like, you've done what you thought. And it feels really nice to be walking in a space where you've manifested what you've always thought could be. And humbly speaking, you still are grounded in knowing that there's more to achieve, there's flaws, you're not perfect, and there's things that you can work on and build upon. So yeah, a younger self would, I guess, be quietly, confidently like, good job. Yeah. And that makes me feel like I should keep going. And I think it's important to have positive self-talk. As an entrepreneur, anyone who is knows a lot of the time the talk is not positive. So just to have you ask me that question, and for me to have a candid response like that, I think it's very important to just reflect sometimes. My partner always tells me, stop and smell the roses, congratulate yourself. And I always say, there's no time, I gotta keep going. So I think if I was to look from my younger self to today, it would be like, keep going. Mm-hmm. Good job.
That's amazing.
Right. Yeah.
And your younger self, obviously you grew up here in Hamilton, and your business still is in Hamilton. You're manufacturing here.
Yeah. It wasn't always here.
No,
yeah.
So what brought you here, and what made you feel like this could be a place that I can thrive, this city?
Well, close to home, proximity, a lot of roots. And then understanding, because I used to manufacture in Nigeria, and understanding that there's a certain polish that comes from the Western world and the perception of that. It's really interesting. Quick tangent. I actually encountered two younger peers of mine in Nigeria inside my warehouse. And they saw the hustle and bustle of production. And they came in and they actually were in the trade of hibiscus. But they only sold to neighboring nations. They would put truckloads out to Egypt, Mali, Burkina Faso, all over the region. But they couldn't wrap their head around what I was doing. And I was packaging it and then sending it to America. That was just, they were bewildered. Like, why would you, how did you, so many questions. And I spent about an hour literally giving them my whole business model. Obviously, I don't want them to take my client.
Yeah.
But they could have, right? Mm-hmm. And I did that to make sure that the journey that I'm on with bringing manufacturing into Hamilton, getting the certification, getting the world standard, and getting it right here at home to then replicate it back in Nigeria. That was the goal. And we're probably 75% of completing that goal because our factory's up and running. We're doing manufacturing in Hamilton. We were able to acquire certification, and we have products in Loblaws and chains like Walmart. So for us, it's really a full circle journey to say, okay, we can now take this knowledge that we've learned and replicate it. And then hopefully it spreads. Mm-hmm. Because the goal in business is to never eat all the pie. Mm-hmm. It's to understand that it's an ecosystem. And when you do take a slice of the pie, it's coming from somebody else. And understanding that and having confidence in your product and knowing that there's a big enough market to share with everybody is what keeps business thriving and alive. And that's something I learned from my grandmother. You can't go into the market and be afraid if someone undercuts you or no, you have to have strength and confidence in your product. Yeah. So making sure that Nigeria has manufacturing and starts to add value is really a mission for us because we understand that we have all the manufacturing capacity in Canada. Canada is known for manufacturing of many things. And Hamilton is a place where you have so many food manufacturers as well. Yes. Breweries, you have so many different businesses in the food space. So it felt like a wise choice as far as like affordability from a strategic cost perspective. It made sense. Real estate is a very affordable. So yeah, it was something that just kind of organically came about. And knowing that proximity is key. My roots are here. So yeah. That's amazing. That's how it came to be. Yeah.
I think, you know, Hamilton often gets a bad rep for being the quote unquote armpit of, you know, Southwestern Ontario.
It's a charactered place.
It's, you know, character is what keeps things alive. But also like the opportunities are endless. And like you said, it is a massive food hub. Like Mondelez, Gailey, big, big companies, you know, mm-hmm. Collective Arts, who we've had on this podcast, sells globally, and they manufacture right here in Hamilton. Very unique product in terms of how it looks, even some of their flavor profiles. Yes. It's a place where business can thrive. And one of my really great goals is to make sure that people that live here mm-hmm. also know that.
Yeah.
And they don't. Like
that's important.
They just don't. I remember coming when we first moved to Canada. I went to Sir John A. That was the high school I went to downtown.
Oh. I did as well.
Stop it.
Yeah. SJAM, yeah.
Okay, we have to talk more.
Yeah, I think we do.
We did. Yeah. No. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. The world is too small.
It is.
Too small.
It is. I did go to two high schools, to be in fairness, but Sir John A. Macdonald, yeah.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Wow. So much to talk about. I can't even like, I can't process right now.
I caught you off guard, sorry.
No, it's just because like we would have been within a grade or two of each other.
I would say so, yeah.
So yeah. Okay, we'll get back to that. We'll get back to that. But I remember a lot of people, everybody, even myself, it's just like, gotta get away, gotta run, you know, nothing in the city. Even when I was done university,
I was one of those people.
Didn't care for jobs here. I was just like, gotta move to Mississauga, Toronto. That's where the money is. So that's where I'm going. But hindsight, Hamilton offers an incredible amount of opportunity in a lot of ways. And I think especially for entrepreneurs, for a lot of reasons that you said. One, living here is a lot more affordable than any of the other places, proximity-wise, very close to the border, which is great for me. Most of my business is in the U.S. So in terms of just travel, it makes it super easy. And then just like the boiling pot of different people, I think it keeps you really grounded. It keeps
most
ideas
definitely
fresh.
Grounded.
It keeps you grounded. It keeps you, it keeps you fresh, because when you meet people from so many different walks of life and you can have conversations with so many people, the level of respect you can have for another person and human, like, changes drastically because of just the stories you would hear from people. And I think that's something that's really great. And I think overall, the city is just a very friendly place.
Yeah, it's got a unique pulse to it. Mm-hmm. Like, I've been fortunate to go out to a few places and travel a bit. And, you know, Hamilton has a unique pulse. It is a very eclectic mix of different people. You get to see some big city ailments, you know, like you get to see a little bit of homelessness, you get to see the problems and dysfunction of having a larger population, but then you also get that small town feel in pockets. And there's a lot of history and culture here in arts.
Yes. Lots of arts.
Yeah, there's a lot. So I think coming from Hamilton has given me a unique perspective on the world. And then being able to take that outside of the city, it's been great for me. I really am a big advocate for the city. I don't think there's any drawbacks. I don't really look at it the way that people say, oh, it's small and get, you can leave, right? Yeah. You can leave and come back.
Yeah. Or the fear component of it. I'll say, like, as a woman going downtown, like, listen, I've been to big cities by myself, New York City, traveled there by myself, walked, you know, yet there are homeless people everywhere. Toronto has it. Everywhere has it. People use drugs. But I have never had a fear of moving through the city in, like, any capacity. Yes, like, women overall are naturally a little bit more vigilant. And as long as you have that, you need that anywhere you are.
I mean, Hamilton does have a unique variety of characters, we'll call them. But no, I hear you. I can't speak to it specifically, but I can definitely listen and appreciate that lived experience you have. Because, it is something to consider when you move around in the downtown core of any city.
So as we wrap up this podcast, which, you know, I wish could go on forever, but we've got three questions that we ask every entrepreneur at the end, and it's really a reflection and also a projection to the future. So what is the one thing that you want to leave behind in your entrepreneurial journey?
Very clear. I have two younger children. I want to leave something where they can say, I don't want it or I want it. And that's entirely up to them. That is my clear mission and goal. And that's why it's Bello Foods. I understand that it's beyond me and that anybody in the family can really fill the role. But it's definitely the main driver for me. What I do, I'm an ambassador for more than just me. So it makes me a little uncomfortable being the face, but I guess the duty calls, right? So, but yeah, that's it. I want to leave something behind that people who are in my family, who come after me, are able to proudly resume, or maybe not. But
I love that. The legacy. The legacy continues. That's a good one. That's a really good one. What's the biggest thing you've learned so far?
Huh. Tough. You can really learn from anybody. And the reason I chose that one is because it might be one of those characters on the street that you learn from. And if you don't keep that ability to be wowed or shocked or be open, you'll become a dinosaur. You won't be able to keep up in the changing global space that we're in with tech and everything involved. Like, you got to be open, and you can't put judgment on anybody as far as a source of knowledge, mm-hmm. right? And yeah, that's probably the most impactful one, because even when I say learn, maybe you learn that you're not empathetic enough. And it could just be the secretary or the front desk of the business you're calling, and you just rush over them. And then you realize, wow, I'm like a bulldozer. I need to stop. So yeah, you can learn from anybody.
I love that, because that's so true. That's so true. And I think it just really cements our conversation so far.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah. And the final thing is, what are you taking into the future with you?
Huh. You know what? Nothing.
Nothing.
And I say that because the future is ahead of us, mm-hmm. and I don't want to carry any baggage forward. I want to be open and allow for whatever the universe or the powers that be have assigned for me to flow through me. And there's no inhibitions or anything from the past that's going to block what potentially could come.
So, yeah. I love that. That's a really good answer. That's a really good answer. Faisal, with all the wisdom here, guys.
No.
Thank you so much for
being here.
This has been an extraordinary conversation.
It's been amazing.
And if you love this episode, we also have an episode with Faisal where we're actually going to showcase his product and talk a little bit more about how it's actually manufactured here, right here in Hamilton. See you soon.